Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Yukonuba Sporting Dog. If you want to get everything your dog's got, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. To help unleash your dog's maximum potential, check out the new Yukonuba Premium Performance Lineup at yukonubasportingdog.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Operation Gundog. This one's going to be some unique content, something that me and John have kind of stumbled upon recently that we just wanted to learn more about it, and we found somebody that can kind of answer some of our questions. Both me and John had our dogs featured in a recent 2021 bird dog calendar, and in collaborating in pictures and stuff for that and talking to some of the other people that were featured, the man whose dog is the cover of that calendar is just an awesome picture. You know, these misty mountains that come to find out it's in Alaska with one of those dogs that you hear about every once in a while, but you might not really know as well as you do your Labs and Goldens. It's the Deutsch Drahthaar. And Mike Harris is joining us. He owns and trains a Deutsch Drahthaar. And he's going to kind of talk to us about what it is, what the breed requires, and what it's like training one of those dogs. So, Mike, can you introduce yourself, give us a little bit about where you're from and a little bit about your dog?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm Mike Harris. I live up here in Wasilla, Alaska, which is about 40 miles north of Anchorage. And I primarily am a bow hunter. I wasn't really much of a bird hunter. I'd done a little bit of bird, you know, upland and waterfowl, but wasn't that big into it until, what do you know, I got a dog, and now it's a lot more fun. But primarily big game hunting with a longbow. And I've been up here for a little over 4 years, and before that I was down in Montana and Idaho, and kind of just always been passionate about hunting and dogs. And this is kind of the first couple of years that both of those have really came together for me.
That's awesome, man. So tell us a little bit about your dog. What's your dog's name, and what are y'all working on right now?
So his registered name is Buddy Vom Tundramore, and the way it works with the litters is each litter is, you know, lettered. So the first litter for a kennel, a registered kennel with VDD, will be the A litter, and every puppy's name will start with the letter A. And then the next one will be B, and so forth. So he's a B litter dog, and his, you know, his registered name is Buddy, but I call him Massey after a kind of iconic traditional bow hunter in Alaska. So, I got him in June of 2019, I guess. Yeah. 2019 June is when I got him. And, I didn't know really anything about the breed, and it was kind of just a fire hose of information, but I've taken him hunting since he was about 4 months old, and now I don't go on a hunt without him. It doesn't matter what kind of hunt it is, he comes with me, even if I have to fly out.
Man, That's awesome. I've always heard of you know, how versatile of a breed they are. Are these dogs registered through VDD, or is it another organization?
So yeah, it's they're registered through Verein Deutsch Drahthaar, which is you know, the abbreviation is VDD, and that's loosely translated as the Deutsch Drahthaar Society. And it's actually a German club, and they have I believe it's 35 groups in this VDD club. 33 are in Germany itself. One is the group North America, which is pretty much just the United States and maybe Mexico. Not 100% on that. And then they have group Canada. So 35 groups total within the VDD. And these dogs are registered through the VDD. They're actually the testing requirements are they're required by the VDD, but the testing regulations are actually through the JGHV is what the testing is. And that's also a German testing system that doesn't just cover the Deutsche Rothaar. I'm not 100% sure on all the breeds it covers, but I do know that one is the Deutsche Kurzhaar, which is the original German wire hair pointer, or German short hair pointer, I should say.
Right. I want to say that was an abbreviation that was discussed in our last episode. Am I right, Dominic?
Which one?
The one that started with the J, JGHV, I believe he said.
No, we talked about NAVDA.
Okay. I could have sworn he said something about
Maybe. I'll go back and listen to while we edit. But
you should, I guess, listen that kind to of our sense. You should listen to our podcast. It's pretty good.
I hear good things. There's a lot of good reviews out there.
Yeah.
That kind of sounds like what the similar situation we have with Hunt Test, where UKC is the registration entity and then HRC is kind of the testing entity.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it's a little a little partnership between the groups. One's kind of, they each have their own little thing that they're responsible for. Whenever you're talking about the testing, though, that kind of brings up, I think, what's such a big part of the breed itself. And I know that these dogs have to go through a lot of testing to even qualify to actually be bred and whatnot. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. And so, you know, I'll start that with, you know, I'm not a JGHV judge. And everything I say, it comes from what I've researched and got from more experienced people. But basically, to be certified to breed as a Deutsche Rothaar, you have to have passed at least one of three hunt tests. And, you know, there's a spring, what we call the puppy test for the VJP. And then there's the fall test that would follow that spring, which is the HCP. And then there's a quite a bit more advanced test called the VGP. And they have to pass at least one of those. And they have to be certified hip dysplasia, shoulder dysplasia free. And they also have to have a coat and confirmation test done and receive a certain score on that as well. But that's kind of like the very minimum requirements. And most people that actually care about getting their dogs breed certified will do at least two of those tests, and then plus the required coat and confirmation test. And then there's also another form that needs to be filled out and sent in as well. And it takes 2 years to get a dog breed certified.
Right. So where are you at right now in that process, and what's kind of the next steps for you?
So my dog is about 20 months old now, and we weren't able to do the VJP or the spring test due to the Corona thing. They actually, the VDD as a whole kind of canceled all those tests. And then in the fall, they kind of made an exception and they made a test called what they call the Corona test. And basically the VJP, all it is it's a hair track or a rabbit track is the first thing you do. And they'll put that young dog on the rabbit track, and the judges evaluate how that dog works that hot track. And the whole basis is that the dog has not seen the rabbit. And then after that, rabbit track has been completed. Then they go to the field work and they evaluate the dog's ability to search, like an upland type scenario, upland bird type scenario. And there is a bird that is liberated out there somewhere, and they need to evaluate a point. And, so what they did with that corona test is they just did a rabbit track in the fall, the day before the fall test, which is the HCP. They did the rabbit track as what they call the corona test, and then went into the actual fall test the following day. So he did that and then went right into the fall test, the HCP, and he's completed that, and that's where he's at right now. And the next step for him would be the breed show, which is where they do the coat and confirmation testing. And that is going to be in May. And they're actually having their first one in Alaska up here in May. So he'll do that.
Bring up a quick question for me is, you know, those actual field tests for them, how much do you have to travel to get to one of those?
So up here... Now, they didn't used to have them up here at all. Just a few years ago, there was no tests up in Alaska. And so you would have to travel outside. And in the lower 48, there's eight chapters in the Group North America for the VDD. And there's quite a few opportunities now. From what I've been told, there used to be not that many. But now, you know, there's quite a few tests that a person could go to in the lower 48 all over the country. Now in Alaska, we have one VJP every year and one HCP and VGP every year. And usually the HCP and the VGP, they're both done in the fall. So they do them kind of on the same days because we have to fly judges up for it. And then they're having their first breed show. So for me, I had to go for the HCP about a 6-hour drive north to where the test was. But, I mean, Alaska's really big, so that's kind of not that out of the ordinary for something like that. But it could be shorter in the lower 48, depending on, you know, what test a person could make it to and all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. And you mentioned that the structural, you know, analysis of your dog for the hips and shoulders, can that be examined by any like OFA certified veterinarian, or does that have to go through a certain channel for Drawtars?
For that part, so there's the coat and confirmation test is done after X-rays have been sent to Germany to a veterinarian that, you know, the VDD recognizes, and they certify by those X-rays that you've got done here. You know, you take them to a vet here, you follow all the instructions, you have the vet follow all the instructions and do these X-rays, and then you send them through I think it's the breed warden you send them through. I can't remember who I emailed them to, but, and then they send them to Germany. They get evaluated, they get, certified or not certified, and then sent back. And then after that is the coat and confirmation test. From what I've been told and what I've heard, it's about 30 to 45 minutes. The dog is evaluated and, they get a score based on what their coat is like and what their conformation is like. They evaluate them in motion, how they walk, how they run. And it's not so much like a, you know, like a dog shows, you know, it's an evaluation to see how they move and how their coat is for hunting. They want to make sure this dog meets the requirements to be a good hunting dog, not like a good show dog, if that makes sense.
So it's less competitive dog against dog and more, you know, towards or against
exactly. A breed standard. All these tests, every single one of them are measured against a standard, not against individual dogs. Now, you know, some dogs are going to get higher scores than others, but that's irrelevant. It's just, you know, how that dog scores against that standard.
That's all. Okay. That's all really cool, man. Like, I'm jealous that, you know, some of these other performance type breeds don't have, you know, something along those lines in place. I mean, you think about, you know, the Labs, the Goldens, the Chessies, you know, the common like waterfowl retrievers that we, you know, see out there, and you know, they can be bred without even having their hips checked, or they've never went to a hunt test at all. You know, they've never been hunting, and your line, I guess your breed, is so well vetted. You're maintaining what it was originally intended for, which I think is
right.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that breed doesn't get diluted.
Yeah, and like even if you get a dog and you test the dog and it does not make breed standards as far as breeding goes, it's still going to be a good hunting dog. It's still, you know, as long as you put the right training into it, because all those restrictions have been in place for so long, that dog's going to hunt no matter what. If its teeth aren't quite right or something's just a little off and it doesn't get that breed certification, that doesn't mean you don't have a good hunting dog. And there's also, you know, there's a ton that goes into that, the breeding regulations. Like I gave you my interpretation of the minimum standards, but most breeders go for that, what they call a performance breeding. And for that, a dog has to have passed all three of those tests, you know, plus the X-ray stuff and the coat and confirmation test or the breed show, and with a few other qualifications. And that you know, that's even that seems to be kind of the, from what I've seen, the standard as far as actual breeders go.
Can you retest if it's a performance test that they didn't do well in, or are these just done at certain ages?
So,
how does that work?
You can, like, if you fail, like say the HZP, which is that first fall test, you can retake it, or you can retake it regardless. Even if you pass it, you can retake it to try and get a better score. I'm not sure if there's only one time that you can retake it. I believe it is, but I'm not 100% on that. And I'm not sure if there's a time limit. I do know for the breed show that you can do it one more time and it has to be 6 months after the first one. But for the tests, you can take the test at least one more time after the first one, regardless if you passed or not. But it does have to fall within, like the VJP is, you know, they have to be within a certain age for that, which is generally 12 to 15 months. It could be a little bit outside that, but that's generally what it is. And the HZP is kind of the same thing. It's kind of that, I'm not sure exactly what the age bracket is, but it's pretty much that dog's second fall of being alive is when the HCP can be done, and the VGP doesn't have an age requirement as far as I'm tracking.
You mentioned, you know, there's a big confirmation coat and appearance aspect to draw tars. What, you know, aesthetically, when I look at a draw tar and a German wire hair, they look very similar. Can you kind of speak to any of the differences in that breed? Like, is there a certain tell if you're looking at a dog, you can kind of go, that's a Drawtar and that's a GWP?
Yeah, so a lot of times Drawtars are mistaken for German wire hair pointers. And it, you know, it's not that surprising because they both came from the same line. And in the 1800s, the Germans came up with this breed or started this breed, and they pulled from four different dogs. One was the wire herd or the Griffon, which you know, we see a lot of today, and then the other was the Poodle Pointer and the Deutsch Kurzhaar, which is the original German short hair, and then the Stickelhaar. They pulled from those four breeds to create the Deutsch Drahthaar. And in 1902 is when the VDD was established. In the 1950s is when, for some reason or another, in America, people started getting away from these breed standards. And that is where the German wire hair pointer came from. And so they all came from that same line, but in the 1950s, they made that split and became a different breed. Now, one of the telltale differences, like if you look at a dog, there's, you know, there's not a whole lot of them, but if you see a dog that's white or mostly white, it's not a Drahthaar, because that is not allowed per the breed standard. Just a very little bit of white patch is allowed on a Deutsch Drahthaar. But other than that, I can't. Like, if I look at one, just appearance-wise, most of them, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference unless I looked at their pedigree, you know, which is very obvious.
And overall, what made you decide on the Drahthaar breed? Like, what drove you there? Was it just, you know, coincidence and circumstance, or was there a lot of deliberate
decision making? It was kind of an accident, actually. I've never been a gun dog guy really before. I believe it or not, I actually had a German wire hair pointer in 2012, and when it was like 4 months old, it got ran over by a vehicle, and so it never went past that. And then I had a Springer Spaniel that just was kind of a rescue thing. It was already kind of older and stuff, and didn't really, it wasn't a hunting dog, you know. And other than that, I'd never had a gun dog. I'd trained cow dogs to hunt coyotes and, you know, things like that, but never had a dedicated gun dog. And, you know, being up in Alaska, I was wanting to get a dog that I could use for different things. And I knew you can train a lot of different breeds of dogs to do things that aren't necessarily what they're bred for. But I had it in my head, and I can't even remember the reason why, but I had it in my head that German wire hairs were kind of that good versatile breed that you could train for all sorts of stuff. And mainly what I was thinking of was blood tracking big game, and just a good dog that I can have with me on all kinds of different hunts, and just kind of be a jack of all trades kind of thing. And so I was looking for German wire hairs in Alaska, like breeders, and I had no idea what a Deutsch Drahthaar was. And in my search, I found these Deutsch Drahthaars, and I did a little bit of research. I was like, oh, okay, well, it's kind of like a German wire hair, right? And so I called a breeder that was having a litter, and he was up in Fairbanks, which is, you know, like six hours north of me. And it was kind of late in the game, and, you know, people already had their names on the list for one of these pups, and he didn't know how many he was having. And so he got me on the list, but it was kind of like an interview, like for a job almost, to get on the list for one of these pups, because they want to make sure that these dogs are going to a hunting home. You know, they don't necessarily require that you test your dog and put it through the program, but they don't really want, you know, a breeder doesn't want one of their dogs just to go be a house dog, you know, and not really hunt or do anything. They like to see you test, but that's not required. But anyway, that litter only had like five pups, and I was number eight on the list. So he referred me to another breeder, the only other breeder that's really active in Alaska, which is actually closer to me, about 20 minutes from me. And, I ended up, getting a pup from him. And I had, like, to be honest, I had no really interest in testing. No, like, I just was just like, well, there's no German wire hairs available here. This is pretty much the same thing, just I guess a more pure line, and I'll train it the way I want it to be, and I'm not that big of a bird hunter, whatever, you know. And then the springtime, you know, I took the dog, you know, big game hunting and on a couple, you know, shot a couple grouse over it and stuff. Not, you know, that kind of thing. And the springtime came, or the springtime was coming, and the breeder got a hold of me and was like, hey, the VJP is coming up and you need to get your paperwork in if you want to do it. And I didn't really know anything about it other than that it was a breeding requirement. And the way I was thinking was, well, I never was really interested in these tests, but I don't want to miss my opportunity for my dog to be breed certified, if just in case, you know. So I was like, I told the breeder, I was like, I need help getting him ready for these tests, 'cause I have no idea what I'm doing. And so he did, he helped me. And then obviously the BJP got canceled and it became the Corona test for the fall. But, that's kind of where I fell into doing the training for the tests. And if you train a dog that's going to pass these tests, it's going to be a excellent hunting dog. And I kind of found that out by accident, but I'm so glad I did.
Man, that's all awesome. You answered another question that I had, is, you know, what was your guide in getting through all of this? And to me, I would think that you would have to talk to somebody that'd been through it. So obviously, you know, your breeder would be a perfect person, because obviously, you know, they own the parents of your dog, or at least the mother of your dog, and would have been through all of that. You kind of mentioned a little bit about some of the hunts that you had been on, and that was another question that I was looking forward to asking. With such a versatile breed, what has been your most memorable hunt?
Man, there's so many. Well,
you can name more than one.
A hunt that was, it was more like one little event that happened on a hunt that made me just like so thankful to have a dog like I have, is you know, I had already, you know, before the Corona test and before the HCP happened in the fall, I was spring bear hunting, and I blood trailed a couple bears with him, and I'd done a little bit of blood tracking work with him. So that was cool, you know. And then I kind of the rest of the summer was spent training him for those tests in the fall. And then after that, it was kind of game time for hunting. And I, you know, I ptarmigan hunted with him, and grouse and all kinds of stuff. But I take him on big game hunts too. And I was out in the Prince William Sound on an island for a week by myself with the dog, hunting deer with my bow. And he hunts with me. Like he's with me the whole time. And, you know, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll be still hunting through the thick stuff, just easing through, and he'll be laying, I'll down him, you know, and I'll leave him, you know, until I get maybe 50 or 100 yards ahead of him, depending on what it is. And then I would whistle him up and then down him again and keep moving, and, you know, so on and so forth. Well, I had just whistled him up and he was coming to me, and he was trotting up, and he was about 20 yards away from me, and a grouse flushed and flew up into a tree. You know, it was on the wrong side of the wind for him to smell it. And, you know, it flushed up there, and he saw it flush and he stopped, and I'm sneaking up on this grouse. I pull a blunt out of my quiver, and it's one of those deals where it's so thick that I had to get really close before I could take a shot. And I shot, and I hit kind of low and just kind of grazed it, and it flew to another tree. Meanwhile, the dog is standing there still watching this whole thing. I sneak up on it again. It flushes to another tree, and I sneak up on it again. And I finally pull a rubber blunt out, and I shot it just perfectly square, and it came out of the tree, but then kind of caught itself in the air with its wings and flew off just out of sight through the thick trees, like gone. And it looked like it was hurt, you know, but it still just flew off out of sight. And I was like, oh man, like I hit that thing really good. Now it's gone. So I called the dog, and he had watched this whole thing as much as you could see through the thick trees. And he comes to me and I sent him on a search, which is an independent forest search is part of the VGP, which is like, he hasn't even done that test yet. It's, you know, this next fall, but where they have to go out, you know, and search on their own out in the woods ahead of you. And I sent him and he spent, 3 to 5 minutes working out and working back. And, you know, the majority of the time I couldn't even see him. And the collar that he has on, I can see, you know, I've got the Garmin 550 or the Pro 550 Plus is what it is. And so I can see the distance and direction he is away from me. And he's working way out there and he's at 80 yards. And I can't, you know, I can only see about 20 yards. And he came back with that grouse. And I thought that grouse was gone. But he was able to go search out there to 80 yards and find that thing and bring it back to me. And he's done, you know, a lot of cool stuff like that, but that was one of those kind of light bulb moments where I was like, holy cow, this is a good dog.
Man, they always say that a dog is the greatest,
it is. And conservation, that, you know, that's, tool in Germany. That's a huge thing. Like in Germany, you can't even, you know, they've got some weird licensing requirements over there, and one of the things is you have to have access to a recovery dog to hunt in Germany, because they take game recovery so seriously.
I've heard a little bit about that, and I also heard that for your dog to be like a game recovery dog, they have to like pass like this certification. Like they don't want some chump dog out there looking for downed game. They want a dog
that knows what they're doing. It would make sense that it would be the JGHV tested dogs, like the VDD has. And yeah, this dog is, it's made it fun to duck hunt. It's made it fun to bird hunt, which I never found that interesting before. Now I love it. Like a lot of times I'll go choose one of those rather than big game, just because it's so fun to watch the dog work. You know, when I'm big game hunting, the dog doesn't work until after I shoot something. And when I'm bird hunting or duck hunting, it's a little bit, you know, especially upland, the dog's working the whole time. And that's another thing too. Like I can go out and hunt ptarmigan up in the Alpine, and that dog is ranging out 200 yards searching for birds and going on point. And then I can go into the thick up here. It is thick woods. And that dog works close in the thick woods for spruce grouse. And that's one of the many versatilities of these dogs. And another thing that kind of gets missed in the way we do things in the U.S. Is fur. And part of these tests, is they have to retrieve fur, and obviously they have to do that rabbit track, and you know, it's kind of a stigma for bird dog guys in the U.S. that they don't want their dogs to know what rabbits are or chase rabbits or whatever. But these dogs know when they're out hunting, they're hunting, and you know, they're not gonna, you know, yeah, like if my dog smells a rabbit, he might point it. And I'm probably going to shoot it too, but it's not going to take away from if he finds a grouse or a ptarmigan, he's going to point that, and I'm going to flush that thing too. And then also like the blood tracking and the big game recovery, that's a huge thing that I'm into. And they know, you know, for one, you train them through these tests, and they've done it all. And so when you give them a certain command, they know what that is. And they've been in those situations before. I already talked about the VJP, and you know, it's just that the kind of the puppy test, that rabbit track and the search and the pointing of the bird. But I didn't know if you guys wanted me to talk about those two tests.
Yeah, so man, give us the
obviously
the
I have not been through a VGP yet, but the HCP is that fall test, and that's pretty much the fall after they've done, you know, supposed to have done the VJP. And basically it's They do the field search, and I failed to mention too that during those field searches, they're firing shots as well to evaluate for gun sensitivity. But anyway, they do the field search, they fire the shots, they're evaluating the all kinds of things related to the actual search, and then the pointing of the bird. And so after that, they go into water work in the HCP, and the first thing they do is a marked retrieve. And you've got your dog, you're at the edge of the water, you know, they show your dog a dead duck, they throw it out there. As soon as the duck hits the water, you can send your dog. And when your dog is halfway to the duck, approximately, they fire a shot at the duck with a live round. And, you know, the dog has to retrieve the duck all the way to hand. And the dog is expected to sit and deliver. It can sit in front of you. It can sit at heel, whatever you've trained it to do. And it doesn't have to sit. But it'll get deducted points if it doesn't. But it does have to deliver to hand. If it fails to do so, it fails the test. The next thing in the water work is a blind retrieve, and you take your dog over and they explain to you, hey, you know, there's a duck in this general direction across this body of water hidden in the cover. It's, you know, dead duck. And you have to send your dog across that body of water to complete the retrieve. And you can direct your dog after you've sent it, but it'll start costing you points. And what I found is the best thing to do is just send your dog and not say anything, because it'll figure it out. it should already know what to do by then. But anyway, it has to complete that retrieve and retrieve all the way to hand. If it doesn't, again, it fails the test. The next thing that they do for the water work, the last part of the water work, is a live duck search, and they've put a live duck out in a body of water, and they, you know, throw rocks at it, whatever, chase it to where it goes across and hides in the cover, and you send your dog, and they're evaluating that dog's search through the whole thing. And now the dog does not have to produce the duck to get a passing score, but if it does produce the duck, it either has to catch the duck or the duck is shot and the dog has to retrieve it to hand. That's about a 10 minute search. A lot of times what will happen is if a dog catches the duck too soon or produces the duck too soon, they'll have you go again because they didn't have time to evaluate the dog's search, because they want to see the dog searching all available cover out there. And so that's the water portion. I did forget to mention for the field portion, you know, you do the search and the point, and then they also do two different drags. They do a feathered game drag and a furred game drag. And the feathered game drag, they drag a duck. It's 200 yards, and there's two obtuse turns in the drag, and it's in like kind of brushy, tall, grassy type terrain. And you go to the start point. You send your dog on a track, and you stay right there at the start point. The dog is expected to track that drag all the way to the bird, pick the bird up, and retrieve it all the way to hand. And then after that, they do a rabbit drag for 300 yards with two obtuse turns. And that could either be in that same brushy type scenario or in the woods. And again, that dog has to pick that rabbit up and retrieve it all the way to you. And it seems like that's where a lot of dogs fail, from what I've been told. And I've seen it, on two dogs anyway. They failed the rabbit drag, but because I guess some dogs just either haven't been exposed to fur enough or haven't been force fetched properly. Who knows, you know, what it is with individual dogs, but, my dog loves fur, so he hasn't had a problem with it yet, knock on wood, but that's also part of the field work. So that pretty much covers the HCP, other than they do evaluate like their teeth and their coat and everything a little bit then too. It doesn't really, it's not as in depth as the breed show is later on, but there's a few checks in the box they got to do with that at that time. Part of the VGP, which he's going to be doing that test this next fall. And that is like kind of the master test. And there, it's a 2-day test. It's so involved. And like the events for that are, they do the same water work as they do in the HCP. The only additional part of the water work is they do, like they did that search behind a live duck, you know, where there's a live duck out there. They still do that, but there's also a search without a duck where there's no duck out there and the dog has to search for a certain amount of time and be evaluated before you call it back. So it's all kind of the same water work plus that. The field work is the same. You know, they do the search, they do the point, but additionally, they have to be steady to flush and steady to shot. And so, you know, they do that part of it. And then they do a blood track, a 400-yard blood track that's laid a certain way. And there's three ways of doing the blood track. And I don't know the little tiny intricacies of doing the different methods, but basically one is you've got the dog on a lead and for the whole blood track, you know, and it takes you hopefully all the way to the end. And another way is you take it so far on a lead and then you let it off the lead and it takes the rest of the track. And when it gets to the end where they've got whatever, you know, day animal or whatever they have it, you know, obviously I haven't done the test yet, but whatever they have at the end, the dog has to bay and so that you can hear it and know that it's got there and found the game. And then the third way is they've got an object hanging from their collar. And when they get to the animal, the dead game, they put that in their mouth, they grab it off of their collar, and then they come back and lead you to the game. And those two additional ways I just explained, those can gain you more points, but they're also an additional way to fail too. So the way I see it in the U.S. and in the states that we can use dogs to blood track, they're required to be on a lead anyway. So that's probably what I would do. but yeah, those other ways they're pretty cool and you can get more points and some people do them. But anyway, after the blood track, they do a furred game drag, and I believe they still do a rabbit, in the VGP, but they also do a fox, and that's why the fox is important. And it's at least 300 meters that they drag the fox with the turns, and it's in the forest, and the dog has to, and the fox has to be, I think, 7 pounds minimum. And the dog has to track that fox, pick it up and retrieve it to hand. And then they also do a fox over an obstacle, which is, it's not a great distance, but they'll have a fox kind of in a box, like, you know, made out of brush or logs or whatever. And it's got to be so many centimeters high, like, you know, a couple feet-ish. And the fox is inside that obstacle, and you have to send your dog on a fetch command, and it has to jump over that, pick up that heavy fox, and jump back over and retrieve it to hand. And they also do a feathered game drag as well, just like at the HCP.
It's one of the things that really stood out to me watching that video of your dog with the fox, is knowing that it's such an oblong and awkward thing for a dog to have to pick up. It's got that extra weight to it. It's not, you know, it's not all tucked into one small package like a duck is. It's just big. It's spread out. It's awkward to walk with, and watching your dog come up to you, you know, it kind of wanted to do a side delivery, but it couldn't because it was, you know, the fox is hanging a foot and a half outside of its mouth. So it kind of did like a front delivery to you. And I mean, I just thought that was impressive. That's
right. You know, an awesome thing to watch a dog do. That the best place to pick that thing up is in the middle. And, you know, during the force fetch process, you're trying to teach them to grab things in the middle anyway. But, you know, sometimes on a fox, it takes them a few times to figure that out. Because, like you said, it is so long and there's lots of places to grab, but there's only really one place to grab it to carry it efficiently. And they, you know, they figure it out after hopefully just a few reps. But the next thing that they – or an additional thing they have to do for that test. And like I said, it's a 2-day test. So, you know, all these things are broken up, but it's all day that your dog's being pressured and you're being pressured probably more. But another thing is that independent forest search, like I explained before, and there's two judges that are about 100 yards out and 100 yards apart, and you have to send your dog on that search, and both judges have to see your dog during that search. They tell you to call your dog back. And then the next, you know, thing is a dense cover search. And that is pretty much like your grouse hunting. You've got a gun, you're moving through the thick woods, and your dog is expected to hunt within shotgun distance or right around there, and you're also firing shots as the judge directs you to do, to watch the dog's reaction. But yeah, that's one of those things where the dog's expected to range out far in the open but stay close in the dense cover. And so that's kind of, you know, where they evaluate that. And another event in the test is obedience during a driven hunt, and that's where they simulate a game drive or like a deer drive where people are moving through the woods, banging sticks together, shooting shots off, and you and another handler with their dog are on the other edge of the woods with your dog either in a sit or a down position, and your dog is expected to stay relatively quiet and calm while this simulated drive is going on. And then a judge is going to walk up to both handlers at different times and direct you to fire shots. And your dog has to stay steady that whole time. And you can put your dog on a lead, I believe, during that, but you'll lose points if you do so. And then another part of that test is healing on and off lead. So they evaluate your dog's healing through the woods on and off lead. And then another one is a down stay where you down your dog, you move off out of sight and fire two different shots at about a 10 second interval. And your dog is expected to stay in that spot while you've snuck off and shot fired those shots. I hope I didn't miss anything there. But like I said, I haven't been through it yet. We're going through that this next fall. But that's the VGP, and that's like I said, that's kind of the final test.
Man, they really leave no stone unturned for those dogs, huh?
Man, if your dog can do that stuff, that's a good dog, you know. And I'm pretty confident my dog can do it. But I hope he can do it on test day, you know.
Yeah, that's always the big part of any sort of testing for the dogs. You know, it's funny talking about you know, how you've used your dog for big game and how they're great blood trackers and everything like that, and how you do quite a bit of longbow hunting. And at the beginning of the episode, you were talking about how you have that Garmin collar on them that says, you know, distance and direction, everything from you. I don't know why, but I was envisioning like the person that uses the longbow and just drops himself off on an island for a week and just hunt and gathers. I would imagine you'd be one of the types of hunters that utilizes a bell on your dog's collar versus, you know, that high technology Garmin sort
mostly
of
mostly I kind of am more of a, you know, traditional kind of guy, but it is so much easier to train your dog with, like, it bypasses so many hurdles with an e-collar for training your dog. And that's, you know, and like, I'm always training, even when I'm hunting, I'm taking training opportunities, and it's a lot easier to not make mistakes as a handler. I down my dog and I move off 75, 100 yards. I can see if he gets up. And if he gets up, I can give him simulation and make him go back down instead of him learning that.
Learning what he could get away with.
You can do it without that technology, yeah. But it's a lot. You're not going to get as much good hunting done while you're doing it. So,
that brings up a good question about the use of e-collars. I know, like, when you talk about British labs and American labs and British style and American style, you're kind of comparing and contrasting the use of e-collars. Now, with, you know, German descent with these Deutsche Drahtars, do you find that, you know, the Germans use like that British approach, or are they more like us where we utilize the e-collar as a tool for training?
From what I've seen, the Germans and the, you know, Americans that are in the VDD, force fetch is a big thing. And I've not ever seen, you know, like I said, very limited exposure and experience to this whole thing, but I've never seen anybody in the VDD that does not utilize e-collars for training. E-collars are not allowed whatsoever at the tests, but for training, it's a big tool. Mm-hmm. And I don't even need an e-collar the majority of the time hunting. We've got, you know, to that point where I don't really need to use it, but I still have it just, you know, in case I need to enforce, something that we've trained on and is maybe a little bit loose that day or whatever, you know, and it helps a lot.
Yeah. It's always better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. Right.
I also wanted to kind of, you know, I'm also a member of NAVDA too. And I plan on testing my dog through NAVDA. The unfortunate thing is, NAVDA doesn't recognize the Deutsche Drahtar. They just loop them in with German wire hair pointers, which I just wish they didn't do that. But, So I'm planning on doing my first NAVDA test this year. And, you know, the way NAVDA describes a versatile hunting dog is, a dog that is bred and trained to dependably hunt and point game to retrieve on both land and water and to track wounded game on both land and water. And you know, they use that term game. They don't really say, you know, feathered or furred, but from what I've seen is most NAVDA people only really consider feathered game. And to me, a versatile dog is way more than that. You know, especially with the blood tracking and the retrieving of, you know, rabbits and foxes. I've seen Drahtars retrieve coyotes before. I haven't had the opportunity with my dog yet, but you best believe I'm going to try and take it when I have it. But, guys run their draughts, on bobcats and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, Drahtars aren't the only dogs that are capable of doing this stuff. A lot of guys use those curs and you know, I'm sure a lot of these other bird dog breeds would do it if trained. I have a buddy that's got a German short hair that loves to do that kind of stuff too. To me, a lot of the NAVDA stuff or the people in NAVDA, a lot of times it seems like they just kind of omit that the furred part of things. But in the Ames rules book for the NAVDA UT test, you can bring your own furred game to be dragged instead of feathered game. But I'm not sure how much it's actually utilized. Like I said, I haven't been to a NAVDA test yet, but I plan on doing it. And when I do it, I plan on using a fox for my dog's drag because it'll better help prepare him for the VGP. But I do kind of, when I look at NAVDA, I wish they would be a little bit more versatile than what they generally are. But But I'm excited. I have been to a couple NAVDA events, and it's fun. In the lower 48, the VDD, a lot of times there's training days that you can go to where there's a lot of, like, it's VDD kind of chapter driven and stuff. Up here in Alaska, we're kind of far enough away that there's really not any VDD training days, but there's, you know, the NAVDA stuff is pretty active, so it's really good to get with those guys and do different training events and things like that.
Man, I feel like you've answered just about any question I can think of about Drawtars. What about you, John? You got any more?
Part two.
Man, we're at like an episode and a half right now. We could definitely keep going. I know for sure. But yeah, I think we've pretty much got mostly everything answered that I had, and then some.
Yeah.
There's lots of help from the breeder and other VDD members. Like that's the only way I would not be here, you know, with my dog as far as we've gone if it weren't for the breeder. So,
well, you know, if we have any of our listeners out there that are interested in the breed, by all means, reach out to us and we can direct you to Mike and he can point you in the direction of those resources there. And anyone who's listening, if you're interested in seeing that picture, which is an awesome picture of Mike's dog, there's an awesome picture of his dog with those ptarmigan with the, you know, mist coming up and some mountains behind it. That calendar, you can go to my Instagram page, The Puddle Hound, and in my link tree, you'll actually see a link to those calendars. So if you just want to see the picture, if you want to pick up a calendar, that's one way that you can go through and do that. Mike, you know, I can't begin to thank you for taking the time to share with us, you know, the breed. It definitely continues to grow my appreciation for these versatile breeds and the Dutch, or should I say Deutsch Drawtar. I definitely learned a lot.
Yeah, it's been great. And, you know, if you guys or anybody, if your listeners want any more information, they can go to vdd-gna.org. And that's the Group North America website. And there's the breeder information. There's all that stuff on there. So they can actually find a breeder in their state and look them up. So
thank you again, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you to all of our listeners. We appreciate all of you guys. We hope you're able to take away as much from this episode as we are. And maybe you've gained a new appreciation for the breed. Maybe you learned about a breed you didn't know about before.